By virtue of a coin toss, Barack Obama will have the first hour, John McCain will have the second hour, and at some point over the next 2 hours, we do expect Barack Obama and John McCain to be on stage together for a handshake.
I guess you got my invitation. We're here at Saddleback Church here in Lake Forest, California, and tonight we're going to use the interview format with these two candidates. Now, we believe in the separation of church and state, but we do not believe in the separation of faith and politics, because faith is just a worldview, and everybody has some kind of worldview, and it's important to know what they are. Now, what I've decided is that to allow for proper comparison, I'm going to ask identical questions to each of these candidates so you can compare apples to apples. Now, Senator Obama's going to go first. We flipped a coin, and we have safely placed Senator McCain in a cone of silence. Now, each of the interviews will be segmented into four different sections. We're going to look at four different things, and the number of questions answered in each segment will depend on how succinct the senator is. I have to tell you up front, both these guys are my friends. I don't happen to agree with everything either of them teach or believe, but they both care deeply about America. They're both patriots. And they have very different views on how America can be strengthened. Now, in America, we've got to learn to disagree without demonizing each other. And we need to restore civility. We need to restore civility in our civil discourse, and that's the goal of the Saddleback Civil Forum. So let's get started, and will you welcome Senator Barack Obama? All right. Thank you.
Good to see you. How are you doing? Good. Good to see you. I'm glad you're here. Thank you for being here. Good.
If you were a tree...
Pretty good crowd you got here.
I got a good crowd.
That's a nice looking crowd.
We're going to talk about four different issues tonight, Barack. The first issue is on leadership.
Right.
These first set of questions deal with your personal life as a leader. And I'm not going to do this with any other segment, but as a pastor, I've got some verses that have to do with leadership. And the first issue is the area of listening. There's a verse in Proverbs that says, "Fools think they need no advice, but wise listen to other people." Who are the three wisest people you know in your life, and who are you going to rely on heavily in your administration?
Well, first of all, let me thank you for having me here, Rick.
You're welcome.
And I love the ministries that are taking place here at Saddleback. This is the second time I've been here, and first time we had a wonderful time. Excluding you, of course, as one of the...
And your wife.
I was going to say. There are so many people that are constantly helping to shape my views and my opinions. Mm-hmm. You mentioned one person I'd be listening to, and that's Michelle, my wife, who is not only wise, but she's honest. And one of the things you need, I think any leader needs, is somebody who can get up in your face and say, "Boy, you really screwed that one up. You really blew
your
that."
Wife's like that
she
too?
Is. So that's very helpful. Another person in that category is my grandmother, who was an extraordinary woman. She was never went to college. She worked on a bomber assembly line during World War II. My grandfather was away, came back, got a job as a secretary, and worked her way up to become a bank vice president before she retired. And she's just a very grounded, common sense, no fuss, no frills kind of person. And when I've got big decisions, I often check in
Talk
with
to her.
Now, in terms of the administration or how I would approach the presidency, I don't think I'd restrict myself to three people. Mm-hmm. There are people like Sam Nunn, a Democrat, or Dick Lugar, a Republican, who I'd listen to on foreign policy. Mm-hmm. On domestic policy, You know, I've got friends ranging from Ted Kennedy to Tom Coburn, who don't necessarily agree on a lot of things, but who both, I think, have a sincere desire to see this country improve. What I found is very helpful to me is to have a table where a lot of different points of view are represented, and where I can sit and poke and prod and ask them questions. So that I'm not, so that any blind spots I have or predispositions that I have, that my assumptions are challenged. And I think that that's, that's extraordinarily important.
All right, let's talk about personal life. The Bible says that integrity and love are the basis of leadership. This is a tough question. What would be, looking over your life, everybody's got weaknesses, nobody's perfect, would be the greatest moral failure in your life, and what would be the greatest moral failure of America?
Well, in my own life, I'd break it up in stages. When I had a difficult youth. My father wasn't in the house. I've written about this. There were times where I experimented with drugs. I drank in my teenage years. And what I trace this to is a certain selfishness on my part. I was so obsessed with me and, the reasons that I might be dissatisfied that I couldn't focus on other people. And, I think the process for me of growing up was to recognize that it's not about me. It's about...
I like that. I like that.
It's about... So but look, that when I find myself taking the wrong step, I think a lot of the times it's because I'm trying to protect myself instead of trying to do God's will.
Fundamental selfishness.
And so that I think is my own failure.
Now, what about America?
Now, I think America's greatest moral failure in my lifetime has been that we still don't abide by that basic precept in Matthew, that whatever you do for the least of my brothers, you do for me.
You do for me.
And that notion of... that basic principle applies to poverty. It applies to racism and sexism. It applies to... not having, not thinking about providing ladders of opportunity for people to get into the middle class. There's a pervasive sense, I think, that this country, as wealthy and powerful as we are, still don't spend enough time thinking about the least of these.
Okay, we've talked about this before, about the common good and the common ground and common good. Can you give me an example of a time, a lot? I've seen that a lot of good legislation gets killed because of party loyalty. Can you give me a good example of where you win against party loyalty and maybe even win against your own best interest for the good of America?
Well, I'll give you an example that, in fact, I worked with John McCain on, and that was the issue of campaign ethics reform and finance reform. That wasn't probably in my interest or his, for that matter, because the truth was that both Democrats and Republicans sort of liked the status quo. And I was new to the Senate, and it didn't necessarily engender a lot of popularity when I started saying, we're going to eliminate meals and gifts from corporate lobbyists. I remember one of my colleagues, whose name will be unmentioned, who said, where do you expect us to eat, McDonald's? And I thought, actually, a lot of your constituents probably do eat at McDonald's, so that wouldn't be such a bad thing. But I think that we were able to get a bill passed that hasn't made Washington perfect, but at least has started moving things forward. I guess the other example where I'm not sure that this was a more of a partisan issue, but it was something that I felt very deeply, was when I opposed the initial decision to go into war in Iraq. That was a not a popular view at the time. And I was just starting my campaign for the United States Senate.
Yeah.
And I think there were a lot of people who advised me, you should be cautious. This is going to be successful. The president has a very high approval rating, and you could end up losing the election as a consequence of this.
Let me ask it this way. A lot of times candidates are accused of flip-flopping, but actually sometimes flip-flopping is smart because you actually have decided a better position based on knowledge that you didn't have.
Right.
What's the most significant position you held 10 years ago that you no longer hold today? That you